Tonight and next Sunday night, I want to look at Matthew chapter 12. Tonight, the first 21 verses, and next Sunday, the remainder of the chapter. If I was to give this talk tonight a title, it would be Conflict with Legalism. It's Jesus' conflict with legalism. We're seeing how Jesus came into conflict with those who were legalists among the Jewish leaders. We might be challenged ourselves as we consider that, because it's a conflict we all face. We face it within ourselves. We all tend to be a bit legalistic. It's the natural human way of retreat. Get into some little law where you can feel safe within a system and ignore the spirit, which is more important. But not only a conflict within ourselves, but sometimes a conflict with others who are legalists and try to put the sorts of restrictions on us that the Pharisees tried to put on others. Jesus was opposed to it, and I hope that we are too. Let's now look at Matthew chapter 12 and see what it's saying. It starts off with a very well-known story of Jesus going through the grain fields on the Sabbath. And his disciples were hungry, and they began to pluck ears of grain and to eat. And when the Pharisees saw it — the Pharisees, of course, were the religious purists, the moral majority of the day — they said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." And that is the crunch. They are doing what is not lawful to do. That's the hallmark of the legalist. He'll always come back, "What is not lawful?" And that really is the expression that crops up two more times as you read through this section. Jesus takes them up on that very expression of what is lawful and what is not. Is that really the basic consideration, simply what is lawful? You see, what they were saying was, they're breaking the Sabbath laws because they are reaping and threshing. Well, you're plucking the ears of wheat, so you're reaping, and you're rubbing it in your hands and grinding it in your teeth, so you're threshing, and so you're working on the Sabbath, and you're not supposed to do that. It's an indication of the hunger that these disciples must have had, that they were prepared to eat it just like that. Not exactly everybody's cup of tea, just eating raw grain straight from the ear of the plant without cooking it or grinding it or doing anything else, but they munched away. So they were obviously very hungry, as it says in verse 1. But the legalists criticized them for it. Notice now how Jesus responds in verse 3. He says, "Have you not read what David did when he was hungry?" So you've got a parallel, you see. These chaps are hungry. Well, David also was hungry. Not only David, but also those who were with him. Verse 4, "He entered into the house of God, and he ate the bread of the presence." Show bread, it's called in the ancient versions. It was bread from the tabernacle that was replaced every Sabbath and eaten by the priests. Well, he says that David entered the house of God and ate the bread of the presence, which it is not lawful for him to eat, nor those who are with him, but only the priests. Now, Jesus uses exactly the same words, "not lawful." Now, they said, "Your men are doing in verse 2 what is not lawful." Jesus says to them, "David also did what was not lawful." And yet, quite clearly, Jesus considers David to be guiltless. You know the story, incidentally. It's that story where David was running away from Saul. He came to a town and he was without provisions. He went to the priest and said, "Could you give us some provisions, something to eat?" And the priest said, "We have no food here. All we have is the bread out of the tabernacle, which has just been replaced. Every Sabbath it gets replaced. Normally the priest would eat it." In this case, David and his men ate that bread. So that's the first case Jesus gives them. David did what was not lawful, but yet it was right to do it. And the second one is in verse 5. "Have you not read in the law?" So he drives them back to the law again. "You're talking about the law." Okay, says Jesus, "I'll refer you back to the law." He meets them on their own ground. "Have you not read in the law how on the Sabbath day," the same day that you're getting a bit uptight over here, "on the Sabbath day, the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath." Very strong word there. They profane the Sabbath, and yet they are guiltless. Guiltless. That's Jesus' judgment. Jesus says they are guiltless, even though they technically profane the Sabbath. How do they profane the Sabbath? Because they work on it. It's all right for everybody else to come along on the Sabbath and offer their sacrifices. They're having a holiday. One day in seven they stop work. Sabbath day rest. They trot along and they go through their offering of sacrifices. But it so happened that for the priests, it was the heaviest day of work in the week, because they had more sacrifices to offer on the Sabbath than they had on any other day. You only have to read the law to see some of the set offerings that were made on the Sabbath, special offerings. And the people themselves tended to offer more on the Sabbath than on other days because they were free. So the priests, in effect, are working overtime. The day of rest is for them a day of work. And yet, says Jesus, they're guiltless. I tell you, verse 6, something greater than the temple is here, namely himself and his teaching. If you had known what this means, verse 7, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would not have condemned the guiltless. For the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. What he means here is that the Son of Man, that's himself, Jesus, being Lord of the Sabbath, knows best how to use it. Now the Pharisees came along with their laws, and they criticized the followers of Jesus because of what they did, without realizing that the one who was among them was, in fact, Lord of the Sabbath. He was God in human form, God become flesh, Jesus Christ. And therefore he would know best how to use it, because he's Lord of it. And he also points out, as he does on another occasion, that the Sabbath was made for man's benefit, not for his affliction, certainly not for his discomfort. And Jesus knows best how to use it. He was condoning what his disciples did in taking that bread, in taking that grain rather, and eating it. Jesus was saying that they were hungry, and it was quite legitimate for them to eat. That's why he quotes that statement from the Old Testament in verse 7, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. What's that mean? What it means is, if I can expand it a little bit, it means something like this. I desire people to show mercy more than I desire people to offer sacrifice. It's not that Jesus was against sacrifice, because sacrifice, as with the Sabbath, was set out in the law. And it was set out for a purpose. People were supposed to keep the law. They were supposed to be obedient to the requirements laid down for the sacrifices. But there is something more than keeping to the letter of the law, and that is fulfilling the spirit of the law. Now, we know today that a lot of politicians and a lot of lawyers make a living out of keeping to the letter of the law while finding all the loopholes around it so that they don't actually break it, technically speaking, but they manage to defeat its purpose. They overthrow the spirit of it while at the same time they keep it, technically. That's legalism. Jesus is saying what is more important is what the thing is aimed at and fulfilling it in that sense. And so he says, I desire that people show mercy. And these Pharisees weren't showing any mercy. Oh, they were pretty good at keeping the laws. And they had 150, 350, 2,000. How many laws do they have about Sabbath keeping? They defined what work was. You shall not work on the Sabbath. Well, how do we know what work is? What is work? I mean, is picking up a book work? Well, is picking up a parcel in two hands work? Well, it's a bit bigger, isn't it? What if two people carry it? It's a bit bigger again. And so they had to define what work was. If you carried it in one hand, well, it wasn't work. But if it took two hands, well, maybe that is work. If it takes two people, it certainly is work. So it's okay to carry a chair from one side of the room to the other, but it's not okay to carry a table or a bed. You know, on one occasion they criticized Jesus because he said to carry your bed on the Sabbath. Aha, he's breaking one of the laws. Because they had all these laws that they made up. And then they judged people according to whether they kept those laws. Jesus is saying, I desire people to show mercy more than to keep technicalities. This is the same as the prophets in the Old Testament. The prophets condemned the people of Israel in spite of the sacrifices the people offered. On one occasion, the prophet speaking for God said, I abhor your sacrifices. Your feasts and festivals are obnoxious to me. What to me this trampling of my courts? Take away the music and the songs. The reason being that the people were offering them in the wrong spirit. It wasn't that sacrifices were wrong. What it meant was that if people offered sacrifices, but their spirit was wrong, then the sacrifice had no meaning. It's a bit like Christianity. We have various, well, not many, but we have a couple of rituals. We have baptism and the Lord's Supper to start with. And we all know that those can be things that are very meaningful to us, or they can be things that are not meaningful at all. Everything depends on the attitude that we have in doing them. Paul talks about it in Romans chapter 2, about the Jews with circumcision. again laid down on the law, but he said, if your life is not consistent with what the law is teaching, then he says you may as well be not circumcised. And in fact, a person who isn't circumcised, if he's obedient to God, is better than you who claim to be following the letter of the law. It's the same principle. That is what Jesus is talking about when he says, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. And if you had known what the meaning of that was, then you would not be pointing the finger and finding fault. Human values are more important than ritual. That's what Jesus is saying. Showing mercy is more important than offering sacrifices. Christ is more important than the temple, and man is more important than the Sabbath. Those are the basic issues that Jesus is dealing with in these first 8 verses. Well, you go on in verse 9, he goes on from there, and he enters the synagogue. Behold, there was a man there with a withered hand. And they asked him, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Because they were looking for an opportunity again to accuse him. Very instructive, that little picture we have there, because it shows us that they were actually expecting Jesus to do something good. It's amazing these sidelights you get. They knew Jesus well enough to know that if there was a crippled person there, because Jesus had a heart of compassion and love, he would be inclined to want to heal him. And so before Jesus has moved a muscle, they've already said, he's likely to carry out a healing. That's a bit better attitude than theirs, isn't it? At least Jesus was going to do something good, and all they were doing was waiting in the wings to criticize him. And so they ask him this question, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? He turns it back on them, as he often did. He very rarely gave a pat answer to a question. He normally made the question work by turning it back on the people and asking them a question or probing deeper. So he says to them in verse 11, what man of you, if he has one sheep and it falls into the pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out? Well, I guess most of them would have. There may have been a few really strict characters among them who wouldn't lift it out. They maybe were going to ride the letter of the law to the end and leave the animal to rot. But most of them would have gone and rescued the animal. And I guess in a crisis, a lot of us would do things. We realise that something's called for and you've got to act. People may not want to do something on Sunday. They may not want to work on a Sunday, but all of a sudden a flood comes and it's up to the back steps and it's coming through the house and you've got to do something. You just sort of can't sit there and say, I'll wait until 1 minute past midnight and then it's Monday and then I might do something about trying to stop the water getting through the house. You think, oh, well, these are exceptional circumstances. How about we roll up our sleeves and get stuck into it and try and do something about defending ourselves against the rising floodwaters? Well, likewise with these people, they may have been fairly strict Sabbatarians, but most of them would have lifted the animal out. But once again, he says, surely a person is more valuable than an animal. And you're just waiting there to criticize me if I heal this man. Verse 12, of how much more value is a man than a sheep? So it is lawful. Now there he comes back to it again. It is lawful to do good on the Sabbath. That's the third time now we've met that expression. First of all, it's not lawful. And then he says, well, David did what was not lawful. But I'm telling you what is lawful. It's always lawful to do good. That's a very simple rule of thumb. It's always lawful to do good on the Sabbath. And that overrides the other rules and regulations, as they themselves knew when they had an animal that was in distress. Well, so much more of a person's in distress. More important to look after the person than to ride the rules to the letter of the law and in the process be lacking in compassion and love. Then verse 13, he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And the man stretched it out and was restored, whole like the other. But the Pharisees went out and took counsel against him, how to destroy him. Now here are people that are legalists and they're talking about keeping the law and they're going to go out now and kill him. Well, if I remember the Ten Commandments correctly, not only does it say in the Ten Commandments to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy, it also says in the Ten Commandments not to kill. Yet here they are about to kill him, looking for some way to get rid of him. Jesus was aware of this in verse 15, and so he withdrew from them. Many followed him and he healed them all, but he ordered them not to make it known, the reason being that he didn't want to be hampered any further by great crowds of followers who wanted nothing other than a free show. A lot of people were simply following out of idle curiosity, wanted to see the latest wonder worker. see the magic tricks that he was doing. They had a wrong perception, a wrong understanding of Jesus and his ministry. And you find quite often Jesus told people not to broadcast the fact of their healing because he didn't want people coming out of wrong motives. We all know that people are very much attracted by the spectacular, but there often isn't very much spirituality there. Jesus was looking for something deeper than simply being attracted by wonders and signs. And in verse 17, Matthew points out that this was all in some way a further step in the fulfillment of the prophecy that God's chosen servant would be one who brought healing and who took the gospel to all peoples. So he quotes from verse 17, this fulfills what was spoken by the prophet Isaiah, and then he goes on, verses 18 to 21, to quote, "Behold my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved with whom my soul is well pleased, I'll put my spirit upon him, and he shall proclaim justice to the Gentiles. He will not wrangle or cry aloud, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. He will not break a bruised reed or quench a smouldering wick till he brings forth justice to victory, and in his name will the Gentiles hope." Just an aside here. Notice twice in that section the expression about the Gentiles. That's a little tip for you when you're reading the book of Matthew. Matthew, more than any of the Gospels, talks about the need to take the message to the Gentiles. We all know that Matthew is the most Jewish of the Gospels. In fact, of the four Gospels, it was the one that was specifically written for Jewish Christians. But it is also the one that most strongly emphasizes the need to take the message to the non-Jewish people. Matthew is the evangelistic gospel. You know how it finishes. That's the climax of the book. "Go therefore into all the world and make disciples of all nations and teach them all things that I've commanded you," and so on. Because Matthew is concerned that the Jews don't get bogged down with the sort of narrow-minded legalism that fouled them up in pre-Christian times, back in the Old Testament times. We know what the Israelites were like. They all sat around and told each other how marvellous they were, that they was God's people, and they never took the gospel anywhere. Matthew doesn't want that to happen in the church. We know it tended to happen. We know that the Jerusalem church, after the opening chapters of Acts, became bogged down. And for the rest of Acts, it was more of a hindrance than a help in the expansion of the gospel. It was really the church in Antioch that took up the ball and ran with it in terms of evangelization. The church back in Jerusalem fossilized and it became something of a nuisance to Paul in his ministry because they became legalists. And you know some of the conflicts that developed in the early church over the legalists from Jerusalem. I think Matthew is attacking that problem and he's saying, don't get bogged down and don't just sit around and say, oh, we're still God's chosen people, and forget about those who are not Jews. So all the way through Matthew, you're going to find that reference, take the gospel to the Gentiles. And here, again, he mentions it twice in this quote. Part of the ministry of the Messiah was taking the message to the Gentiles. That's just an aside. Let me get back to the main topic that I'm concerned with, and that is the legalism that Jesus was finding himself in conflict with. You see, one of the reasons why we tend to be legalistic is that we tend to nail certain issues that are measurable. Now, if a person does something wrong on the Sabbath, you can measure it. It's very obvious. If he goes out there and works on the Sabbath, everyone can see him, and so they come down like a ton of bricks. And yet a person can have malice in his heart, like these people did. They can be scheming and conniving. They can be full of revenge and hate and spite. But it's very difficult to measure that sort of thing. And we've got to be careful as Christians, because we can very often stand up and take the moral high ground, and we can denounce all the obvious sins of society. You know the sorts of things I'm talking about, the very obvious sins of violence and immorality and sexual perversions of one sort or another, because they're very measurable. But the more hidden sins are the ones that very often are more dangerous to us. Most of us in this building here are not likely to be fouled up with the sorts of immorality and violence that we condemn. But we are likely to be fouled up with things like pride, an unforgiving spirit, malice, vindictiveness, spite, hypocrisy, all those hidden things. And as I understand the Bible, they are the things that are most often dealt with. Jesus, consistently through his ministry, talked about these things that come from within, and they're the things that defile a person. And legalism can't deal with those things. Only the Spirit of God can deal with those things. Legalism can only deal with things that can be measured. You can only legislate against that sort of external sin. You can get legislation in the country here, in the civil administration of our state. You can get legislation against traffic breaches and against violence and things like that. But you can't get legislation against immoral thoughts and lying and things like that, because how on earth are you ever going to nail the issue home? And so we can be very self-deceptive, deceiving ourselves that we are pious, that we are following God's rules, that we are His holy people, because we aren't committing these external measurable sins, and yet at the same time be full of far more evil wrongdoings. That is what Jesus is working against, and that's what you and I have to be careful of. But I just want to draw your attention here to the contrast we have between the way Jesus deals with the legalists and the way he deals with those who are really in genuine need. Notice in verse 13, he says to the man, "Stretch out your hand." Now that was a very provocative action on the part of Jesus. Jesus knew that these chaps were out to get him, and he didn't pussyfoot around. He took the battle to them, and he was quite provocative, knowing that they were after him. He said to the man, "Stretch out your hand," and he healed him on the spot. Jesus was a controversialist at times. In fact, John Stott has written a book called Jesus the Controversialist. He certainly did take the battle to them, and he deliberately provoked them, because he wasn't going to accommodate to them. He knew that they stood for everything that his ministry was opposed to. And so he told this man, in front of them all, to put out his hand and publicly, nothing behind the scenes, nothing "I'll see you later" when they're not looking, right in front of them all, Jesus healed them, as much as to say, "Now what are you going to do about it?" And we know what they did about it. They tried to kill him. Jesus was utterly uncompromising. Who were the people that Jesus got his strongest opposition from? Not the prostitutes and the tax collectors and the perverts. He got his strongest opposition from the religious bigwigs, from the cleaned up puritanical people, from the respectable middle class citizens, from the moral majority of the day. They were good living people, Pharisees, but very few of them came into the kingdom of God. And later on in this very same book, Jesus says the tax collectors and the prostitutes will get in the kingdom before you, because they responded to his ministry. It wasn't that Jesus watered down the gospel. It wasn't that he lowered his standards or compromised his principles. But he knew how to be a friend of sinners. And that was something that these people couldn't live with, because they were proud of the fact that they weren't friends of sinners. You won't get us consorting with those. But when Jesus met them, Jesus didn't accommodate to them. In fact, to prove that, he turned them from their evil ways. It was Jesus that saved them, not the Pharisees. It was Jesus that saved the prostitutes and the dregs and the scum and the tax collectors and all the people that were the riffraff of society. Jesus was the one who turned them from their ways, but these others never touched them. In their legal purity or whatever they considered there, they separated themselves. So Jesus was utterly uncompromising in dealing with the legalists. But when it came to those who were repentant, even though they were from the lower classes of society, we see that he never turned away from those who sought him. The bruised reed he didn't break. The smoking flax he didn't quench. There was nothing ostentatious about Jesus. He didn't make a big show in the streets. He didn't prance around trying to win votes like some upfront performing politician. He was quite provocative to those legalists. But when it came to the people in general, he didn't make a show of things. He went about his work quietly. And when he saw people who were responding to his message, he dealt with them with compassion and tenderness. And yet very often there were people who were religiously very much lacking in any sort of respect or status in the community. I think sometimes we get this a little bit wrong. Sometimes we're too hard on people that are trying to do their best. They may be fairly weak in the faith. And we're too accommodating to some of the hardheads among us. Now these hard-headed people, they're not weak Christians who are likely to be stumbled. They're hard-headed characters who aren't going to budge an inch for anybody. And you find that when Paul was dealing with these, he was utterly uncompromising to those people. "To whom we did not yield an inch, no, not for 1 minute," he says. "I withstood him to his face," he says on another occasion. You see, Paul was, again, like Jesus, quite strong in taking action against those who wanted to imprison people within their own legalistic system. But on other occasions he met those who were weak in the faith. They had hang-ups over food and little things like this, and they were easily stumbled, and Paul was very considerate of them, and he encouraged Christians to be considerate of each other. Jesus likewise, he sees this woman taken in adultery. Well, you know the story, they all want to execute her, do all sorts of horrible things, but one by one they have to retreat when Jesus challenges them. And at the end it's Jesus who turns to this person and he says, now don't sin anymore. A very brief but very pointed instruction to the woman. But you see the difference between the attitude of the legalist and the attitude of Jesus. But he was the one that dealt with the woman and sought to turn her from her ways. There was an occasion when he healed a man, a blind man, and the man couldn't see straight. He couldn't see properly when he was healed. And he said, I see men, but they look like trees walking. And Jesus didn't desist until the man had been fully healed. You see, Jesus saw that there was some deficiency in his faith. And again, the bruised reed he didn't break, the smoking flax he didn't quench, until he had brought that person to salvation. And then we have the case of the woman in Luke chapter 7, who had been forgiven many sins. I take it she was a prostitute. Simon the Pharisee was scandalized over the fact that Jesus allowed her to anoint his feet and massage them and wipe them with her hair and so on. But we see again that Jesus had words of rebuke for Simon, but he had an understanding of that woman. Her theological knowledge may have been very small, but at least she was responding in the only way she knew, because her sins had been many, and now she had found forgiveness, and she was demonstrating her love to the one who'd forgiven her. And we have the story of the man in John chapter 9, the blind man who'd been healed. And we know again that the Pharisees, the legalists, came to this blind man. They said, he must be a sinner. I mean, he's healed you on the Sabbath. Goodness me, what more can you expect? Then the man says, look, well, don't argue with me. He says, I was blind and now I can see. And he gave them some fairly straight logic. He said, he must be from God. He can't be a sinner. I mean, after all, who heals the blind like that? And when his logic got a bit too much for them, they threw him out. Jesus again tracked the man down. And he said, do you believe in the Son of Man? And he said, well, tell me, Lord, who is he? And he said, I'm the one speaking to you. The man said, oh, Lord, help my unbelief. You see, once again, the difference in the way Jesus dealt with people. Well, there we have it in that section, Matthew chapter 12, verses 1 to 21, the contrast. I hope that you and I can learn the lesson that's looking at us in the face and take from Jesus the way we ought to behave towards people, whether you've got the legal hardheads on one hand or you've got these who are needy on the other. They may not be well instructed, but at least they are people for whom Christ died. And to those we must be understanding as we take to them something of the Spirit of Christ, realizing always, as Jesus said, he desires people to show mercy more than to offer sacrifice. Human values are more important than ritual. Showing mercy is more important than offering sacrifices. Christ is more important than the temple, and man is more important than the Sabbath.